We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
We're gonna play.
All right, let's go, let's go. It's Jolo and Dibs here on 95.7 The Game. Welcome to the show. Happy Wednesday. Big, big show in store for you today. I'm not just saying that. This is one of those rare days in the COVID-19 era where we have got a ton going on. 30 minutes from now, it's Joel Corey. There's a bunch of news breaking out of the NFL. Most of it hit yesterday. Big money for Chris Jones, Chiefs defensive tackle. That's a done deal. Big money coming for Myles Garrett. He's going to become one of, if not the highest paid defensive players of all time. That's expected later today. And Dak Prescott, what's going to happen with the Dallas Cowboys starting quarterback? Joel's going to break all of that down for us in the next 30 minutes. He's a former NFL agent. He knows the salary cap inside and out. So all questions regarding Raheem Mostert, George Kittle are going to be on the table as well. That is 30 minutes from now. Okay, Joe Theismann's in 1 hour at 7 o'clock. He's got a new book out, but we've got a lot to talk to him about regarding the Redskins. And this leads into the big news today. This is going to be a huge day based on what has happened in the last 24 hours and what is going to happen. Number one, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 Pacific today, franchise tag deadline. Any player hit with the franchise tag has until 1 o'clock Pacific today to reach an agreement on a long-term deal with their team. After that, that's it. They're playing under that tag or they are sitting out. For example, A.J. Green has yet to sign his tag. Will he play for Cincinnati this year? Dak Prescott has signed his tag, but he wants a long-term deal. Will they get it done by 4 Eastern, 1 Pacific today? So keep it locked here. We've got everything that's going on in the NFL. Number two, there's big news coming out of Washington. If you've been following the deepest, darkest corners of the internet, which really isn't that deep or dark, Jason Lockham for us, CBS, and most of the beat writers in Washington, there is a story coming. No one's really sure what it is. I believe the Washington Post is on it. It has nothing to do with the name change. It looks like this is going to be a bad week for Redskins football. That's the speculation. A lot of people talking. The story's going to be coming out soon. Could be at the end of the week. We'll talk to Theismann about all that stuff today at 7 o'clock. In addition, at 8:30, we're revealing number 6 on the top 10 greatest athletes Bay Area sports history. But let's start with some good news, Dibs. Johnny Cueto, he hit 60 pitches in yesterday's simulated game. 8 days from today, he's your starter against the Dodgers in Los Angeles to open the 2020 season.
It's exciting, the fact that we have an opener coming up now in just a little bit more than a week. And I also noted, Joe, that he had 7 shimmies in those 60 pitches. So he's working his way through his shimmy. He's got his stride out when he's in the stretch. I really am looking forward to watching Johnny Cueto, as Lowe likes to call him, back out there on the bump, because he's an exciting pitcher. He's an interesting pitcher, the way he mixes up his windups.
Not 5, not 6, not 7.
Actually, exactly 7, LeBron. 7 shimmies was the official Dibber shimmy count. But just the fact that an opening day starter has been named is exciting. It's a little bit weird that it's not Madison Bumgarner, because Bumgarner has started opening day, I think, 5 of the last 6. There was a Ty Block thrown in there in the mix, but the fact that there's an opening day starter named has got me pumped for baseball, guys.
Is Cueto the most marketable Giant going into this season? Think about that for a second, because his first year with the team was 2016. He hasn't won a single World Series with these guys. Not to say that's his fault, but when you go up and down this roster, from the rotation to the bullpen to the positional players low, is this your most marketable player right now?
Without a doubt, he's the best. He's not just the most marketable player. He's the best player on the team. He is what Madison Bumgarner would have been to this team. And that's not just that. I think Dibs is right that, you know, you got your starter. We know we got our starter. And everyone's talking about how hard he's been working. I'm hearing, you know, rumblings over there, good rumblings, that how hard Johnny's been working and what he's been able to do. Johnny's going to be a stud for this team this year, you know, if his arm holds out. And that's the thing that, you know, that people didn't really look at and anticipate. If you think that with this shortened season and the way it's going to be played, think about if you have Johnny Cueto and you would have had Madison Bumgarner. Think about those two guys, what you would have been able to do for your ball club. Will we be having these same conversations? Is this team going to be just a dud? You know, if you have pitching is going to be at a premium, especially with the 60-game season. So, yeah, Johnny's going to be a nice little piece for him. But too bad if Madison was in the building. I think everyone was talking about this team and looking at this team a little bit different.
Johnny Cueto, this will be his first opening day start since he joined the Giants in 2016, but he is no stranger to taking the ball for the first game of the season. It'll be his fifth total opening day start. He took the mound on opening day four times in Cincinnati, went 1-1, but had a 0.64 ERA. So he's been good in the openers. That's not to say it's going to happen in L.A., but he has a track record of success in these spots. Against the Dodgers, however, at Dodger Stadium Lifetime, 4-5. Again, dismiss the record because he's got a 2.36 ERA in 10 career starts down there. So he's fared well in that stadium. He's fared well on opening day. But again, that stadium won't have fans, and opening day is happening in late July rather than in late March or in early April.
Yeah, it's a weird one, and it's
so really, bizarre.
It's so bizarre, and it's good for Johnny Cueto that he got a little taste of action last year coming back from the Tommy John, so it won't feel like a 2-year gap or a year and a half gap, whatever it would have been, because of the odd July opener. And I thought Lowe made a very astute point, and one that I think is worthy of keeping an eye on, not necessarily just how Bumgarner does, but how the Giants starters do, because you think about a short season that we have, 60 games, if you had that kind of a 1-2 punch, if Johnny Cueto returns to Cueto form, not being overwhelmingly dominant, but being a guy who can get you deep into games, keep you in games, you won't be able to think, I wonder if they would have had the 1-2 punch, how this team might have fared in a short season.
Not just 1-2. Look at Jeff Samardzija and how he picked it up last season.
True.
That's one of the stories totally lost in the shuffle, is that Samardzija was a very bankable starter who was effective and was able to work deep into games last year. It just happened to be a crazy season. Bochy's last. They got hot right at the deadline, so they don't move Bumgarner. There were so many different storylines. Samardzija's performance never really gained as much attention as it probably should have. But for all the struggles he had with the team low, he stepped up big last year. So now to your point, you're looking at if you had Bumgarner plus a healthy Cueto plus Jeff Samardzija, and if the bullpen's halfway decent, who's to say in a 60-game season you couldn't have made at least a little bit of noise?
Well, no question. I think that's what a lot of people are going to be looking at. I mean, of course, hindsight is 50-50, and everyone's, oh, my God, I wish we would have known. But no one knew that this ugly corona or this rona would have everyone just in you know, just running amok. So, you wouldn't have known. But it's just going to be great to see Johnny Cueto take the mound, take the bump. Really looking forward to seeing this young man get after it. I love him when he's shaking and twisting and turning up there. I mean, when he gets it rolling, Dibs, the guy is absolutely one. He's definitely an upper tier type of pitcher once he gets it going. Biggest thing about Johnny Cueto is just making sure the guy can stay healthy. And hopefully this year we'll get a full 60 games out of him, which is now you're not looking at him having to put that much stress on his body. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how they decide to use him and employ him because of the fact that it's a 60-game season. Because of the fact you don't have to play, you know, it's not, you know, 162. So that's going to definitely, be more favorable for Johnny Cueto. So you should see more sustainability out of Johnny Cueto this year when he pitches.
Now, hopefully Jeff Samardzija can come out hot, Joe, because if you look at it, the trade deadline is rapidly approaching. Even though the season hasn't started, we need to start thinking about that trade deadline. Normally July 31st, moved this year to August 31st. So you figure Jeff Samardzija is going to have about 5 weeks, and all we talked about last year was, man, Samardzija's got to be trade bait. He's pitching so well. You're going to have 5 weeks before the trade deadline, so what if he comes out and he's dealing again and the Giants are in that, 19, let's say they're 19-19 or somewhere around that at the deadline, maybe on the bubble of a wild card. We're going to be revisiting this do you trade Jeff Samardzija conversation yet again.
First time in MLB history, opening day, you'll be discussing opening day the upcoming trade deadline and the playoff hunt, because all three things are going to be top stories for the first pitch 8 days from today when the Giants are in LA to take on the Dodgers. Cueto, for those who forgot, was incendiary with this team when he joined them in 2016. 18-5 over 32 starts with a 2.79 ERA, but has been beset by injuries ever since. Blisters, a sprained left ankle, and Tommy John surgery. So hopefully we are able to see him out there not only opening day, but every 5 days or so as the Giants embark upon this wacky 2020 version of a season. All right, today's show brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full service banking, no compromises. Chilton Auto Body text line is going to be open all day as well. It's 888-957-9570. Like I said, today's show has a sense of urgency. 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, the franchise tag deadline. Is Prescott going to get a deal? Is Derrick Henry going to get a deal? A lot of questions up in the air. Big news, bad news will be eventually surfacing out of Washington. Not regarding the Redskins team name. They apparently have something going on behind the scenes that's going to make some major headlines when it comes out. But yesterday, the NFL was spending Myles Garrett, Chris Jones, and what's coming up with Dak Prescott. It's all on the other side. Joe Lowe and Dibs, 95.7 The Game.
Now back to Joe, Lowe, and Dibs.
D-P-O-Y.
On 95.7 The Game.
This segment right here is presented by Golden State Lumber, open from 6 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday, with some locations open on Saturday as well. Visit GoldenStateLumber.com for more information. Joe Theismann in 45 minutes at 7 o'clock. Joel Corey, 14 minutes from now at 6:30, to help us get through everything salary cap related as the franchise tag deadline for franchise players to get their long-term extensions approaches. 4 o'clock Eastern, 1 o'clock Pacific today. Let's start with Dak Prescott. If nothing, and I mean nothing, happens, he's already signed his franchise tag. $31.4 million is what he's headed for this season. But Jane Slater, NFL Network, was reporting yesterday that while the two sides haven't really been talking since March, there's a deal out there. There's a final offer. It's on the table. It's 5 years. It'll pay between $33 and $35 million per year with just over $100 million guaranteed. So here's where you're at if you're Prescott. You can turn that down, which it looks like he's had so far. Play out the franchise tag at $31.4 million and go from there after the season. Or there's a 5-year deal on the table. It pays between $33 and $35 million per year with just over $100 million guaranteed. You saw what Mahomes got. You know that Watson and Lamar Jackson are coming up soon. They're going to get a lot of money. You could take the risk and go for more. Low, is it crazy if he turns this down? Because yesterday on social media, this was one of the big topics. Is Prescott crazy for turning down 5 years, $33 to $35 million per year, $100 million guaranteed?
I think so. I think that it's okay to bet on yourself. And I understand that, hey, this young man understands the importance of striking while the iron's hot. How hot is it? How hot is it? Is it perception versus reality? Do sometimes the players think sometimes you're bigger and better than what you are, and you feel that you're owed a certain amount because maybe the market, or maybe you see others and you say, man, I should be right there, right close to that. I think sometimes that has to be taken into consideration when you're doing a contract and you're a player of that status. But also you got to look at around and say, okay, how much was this of coaching, but how much is this on me? How am I viewed when I have top three or four running backs in the league, have one of the better offensive line, maybe not the best now, but still one of the best offensive lines in place. I have a top 10 receiving core altogether. Now, if other quarterbacks was in this system, not saying when they win a Super Bowl, then you got to wonder how far could they go? How far could they take this team with the talent that's on there? You got to ask yourself all these tough questions. And then you got to say, okay, am I going to, just because I'm worth that, or is the market going to view me like that? You look at certain quarterbacks in this league, and even though they may be worth certain, sometimes the market is not favorable, or certain players, the market's not favorable like they are for others, for whatever reason it may be. So he has a lot of thinking to do. And when I look at this thing, it's still an opportunity to him be on America's team, on the media, where he's going to make money off the field. All the other things surrounding this young man, if you go ahead and take this route, a bird in the hand, me and Dip say it's better than two in the bush. If you take this deal, now it's still a deal that you're still going to be fairly young. You're going to have an opportunity to make that much money and then some. If you can still do what you do. But this is that first one for him, Joe and Daniel. This is his first one. So why not take the first one? Because he's never made it yet. He's a fourth round pick. So he didn't make a lot of money. Take advantage of the opportunity because you're still pretty young. You'll get to the table once again.
Apparently, the big hang-up is the fact that Prescott wants a four-year extension. He wants a four-year deal, and the Cowboys want to do a five-year deal. The Cowboys never do four-year deals. There's like one out there for a very low limit that they did a few years ago for a four-year contract. The main reason for that, Prescott wants to get back to free agency as soon as possible. He would be 31 years old. He'd be entering his age 31 season if he got a four-year deal that started this year. Remember, he's scheduled to turn 27 on July 29th. Later this month, he'll turn 27 years old. So he wants a four-year deal. Dallas is saying no. A, we don't do that. And B, we do 5 years, not just because of precedent, because we're able to spread out the money. The signing bonus and everything else, it helps us keep the cap under control. Dibs, if you're Dak Prescott's agent, and $33 to $35 million per year is on the table for 5 years with $100 million plus guaranteed. What are you telling him to do?
I'm telling him thanks, but no thanks. It's the Ariana Grande, Joe. Thank you, next. I'm playing out the franchise tag this year, and I'm confident that I'll do well enough to where Dallas is going to be faced with a conundrum next year to either sign me to a deal more friendly to me, Dak Prescott, or franchise me again. And I'm not really scared by the Cam Newton situation or the Jameis Winston situation, because as Dak Prescott, you realize you're healthier, you're younger, you have more upside. And I believe that there are going to be some quarterback hungry teams out there to where Dak Prescott can play well. And even if he plays to his average sort of season, that's still going to be good enough to command big money on the open market. So I would put my faith in myself. I wouldn't want to anchor myself to Dallas. I don't know how Mike McCarthy's going to be. The offensive line's getting older. I don't really know if this situation is going to continue to blossom. So I would say thank you for your offer, which, by the way, was lower than their initial offer, and I would go to the open market.
If you're talking about making a gamble, which is what Prescott's going to do here if he's not going to sign a deal, I like the gamble, right? Look at the information that he's got in front of him right now. Lo, you all right?
Yeah, I am. I'm good.
You want to turn down the mic if you got stuff going on there?
Sure.
Look at what he's got going on. All right, everything around him. Number one, you got seven teams going to the playoffs this year rather than six. So that gives you a better opportunity to get to the postseason. You get to the postseason as the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys, it's going to bring a lot of clout with the fan base. It's going to be tougher to say goodbye. That's number one. Number two, look at the weapons around you. Amari Cooper, Michael Gallup, who had a breakout season, and Jerry Jones just drafted CeeDee Lamb out of Oklahoma. So you've got an explosive receiving core. You've got a very talented offensive line. Yes, they're getting older. Yes, Travis Frederick retired, but still above average, probably top eight in the NFL going into this season. You got a great running game behind you in Zeke Elliott, and you got Mike McCarthy coming in as head coach. Now, say what you want about McCarthy. He might not be great, but he's an upgrade over Garrett. And at the same time, your play caller in former Boise State quarterback Kellen Moore is still on the staff. So it's not as if you're going to completely overhaul everything you do offensively to the point where there's going to be this learning curve. So you also look at the NFC East and realize Washington is nowhere near being highly competitive. The Giants could take a step forward, although they've got a new head coach. Garrett's their offensive coordinator, and who knows if Daniel Jones will lead them to 10 or 11 wins in competition this season. And you got Philadelphia. So it could legitimately be a two-horse race for the division. An extra team gets to the playoffs this year anyway. You're loaded on offense. You've got a better coaching staff. You take the gamble this season. What's to say next year you can't come back and get more? Worst case, if you get hit with a franchise tag again, you're essentially signing a two-year deal that's going to pay you close to $70 million guaranteed, and then you're back out on the open market anyway. So I can see all the people who are telling him, Dibs, that he should take this money because he's never going to get it elsewhere. But if he makes a gamble, it's a calculated play. It's like having suited connectors with the straight and flush opportunities on the board plus low pair.
And if you miss on the river, on the turn and on the river, then it's unfortunate because you do have the two-way hit on this one, because the only really bad thing that can happen is you get injured in your plan on the franchise tag. You get injured or you have a mediocre subpar year, and all of a sudden now when you go out on the open market, you're not going to command as much. But I like what you were laying out as far as the scenario, because imagine if Dallas makes it to the playoffs, wins a couple games. Let's say they even make it to the Super Bowl but lose the Super Bowl. The Cowboys fans will be clamoring to keep Dak. So then going into next year, he's in a better position to maybe get that long-term deal, maybe of the same level that he got this year, but he would have the flexibility to go elsewhere. So I like the idea of betting on himself, especially considering how good the team should be.
All right, Prescott's looking to get paid, but Chris Jones, defensive tackle from Kansas City, got paid yesterday. Just like Prescott, he was on a franchise tag deal potentially for this season, but Kansas City wanted to lock him up, and lock him up they did. 4 years, $80 million with $60 million guaranteed. For comparison's sake, DeForest Buckner, when he was traded to the Indianapolis Colts, got 4 years, $84 million, but he only got $44.3 million guaranteed. Chris Jones is getting $60 million guaranteed. So for those scoring at home, over the last year, Kansas City has handed $141.5 million guaranteed to Patrick Mahomes, $60 million guaranteed to Chris Jones, $62.3 million guaranteed to Frank Clark, and $35 million guaranteed to Tyreek Hill. Jones has been an absolute beast over the last two seasons. 23.5 sacks. He's second only to Aaron Donald for guys who primarily line up as interior defensive linemen. So this is now the trend. If you're paying attention at home, we've been telling you about this on the show for years. You get the passer, and then you get the guy who can disrupt the passer. The Chiefs have Patrick Mahomes, the best passer in the game, and now they've locked up not only Frank Clark, but Chris Jones. So if you're looking at the Chiefs right now, low financially down the road, this could tie him up. But Chris Jones at 4 years, $80 million, $60 million guaranteed. Lil Lowe's got to be looking at this as motivation for this upcoming season, because D-line guys are getting paid these days.
Yeah, they are, and especially when they play inside now. Used to be a huge, huge market for just outside pass rushers that they would get the majority of the money, because they said, hey, those outside guys, they can get to the quarterback, and they brought a lot of heat. But now you look at the inside interior lines, Aaron Donald, you know, Jones now, you're starting to see a movement for getting to those guys that play along the interior line. Why? Because I think they're more disruptive. They're more disruptive than pass rushers. Pass rushers, you can run away from those guys. But, Dibs, if you guys have a guy lined up over the A-gap or lined up, you know, right there above the center or playing one shade over the guard, now he can control the game if he's that fierce and if he's that unique, because now he can beat the guard or the center, and he's right there and in the backfield to disrupt pass plays, to disrupt run plays. That's why now you're starting to see an emphasis for those guys, you know, the Buckners and guys that can play interior and can be that aggressive and that disruptive, because they can control the inside interior line, and it's compared to just being an outside pass rusher that you have to come from one side, and one side sometimes can't disrupt the game as much as a dominant inside player.
Yeah, especially when he's got to command that double team. And this is one of the things you've taught me over the last year or two, is watching the way the interior linemen either line up straight over the center, or if they're shade over to one side or the other, and what the guard has to do. And especially when you think about a player like Aaron Donald, and I know he's the gold standard, but even the ability to move someone around like Eric Armstead, who is really trending toward becoming a great player in this league, you have to have, as an offensive line, the ability to recognize where these game wreckers are and then shift your offensive line accordingly. And if you can scheme it up right defensively, you end up with one-on-ones on the outside, so your outside pass rusher has a better chance to get after it. And you look at Kansas City with their two guys up front now making those massive contracts. If they stay healthy, this defense is going to be improved, which was one of their weaknesses last year.
So Prescott's hoping to get paid. Chris Jones got paid, and Myles Garrett is on the verge of getting paid. Cleveland Browns defensive end is close to finalizing a record-setting 5-year, $125 million contract. It would be the largest for a defensive player on an average per year basis in the history of the National Football League. Right now, the highest paid defenders based on a per year average are as follows: Khalil Mack at $23.5 million, Aaron Donald at $22.5 million, DeMarcus Lawrence at $21 million, DeForest Buckner at $21 million, Frank Clark at $20.8 million. This would put Myles Garrett at $25 million per year, and he deserves it. Since his rookie season, his rookie year, he's averaging 0.82 sacks per game. That might not seem like a lot, but he's averaging just under a sack a game. There are only three guys in NFL history who have recorded a higher frequency of sacks per game with a minimum of 30 games played. J.J. Watt, Reggie White, and Mark Gastineau. So 5 years, $125 million. Now, when we were talking about giving Jimmy Garoppolo 5 years, $125 million, that seemed like a lot of money. $25 million per year for a quarterback. Now we're handing it out to a defensive end.
Yeah, this is pretty weird. It's actually, you know, you look at this and you're like, my goodness, how much is this cap's going to continue to move, and especially in a market that you think, okay, people are going to slow down, especially with the corona and all the different things that's surrounding the National Football League and just sports in general. You look at baseball and all the things that people are talking about, but yet NFL business as usual, business is booming. So you look at this young man, you look at Myles Garrett, and you look at certain things. You look at the last six games he didn't play in. You're like, okay, what does it tell you? Tell you that the organization still loves him. The organization thinks that this is a good person, in spite of what you saw last year in that game against the Steelers. $125 million, that's a good job. That's good work. I can't believe $25 million a year. And I know we talk about the quarterback position, which is unbelievable, but this is one of those situations where, like, hey, this guy, we want to show that, hey, he's going to be here for he's going to be a long time on this team, on the Browns organization. The Browns have no intentions of making this guy go anywhere, so let's take care of the guy. Kind of shocked, but, you know, this market, like you guys always saying, the next man up. Because do I think he's better than Aaron Donald? No. Would I rather have Aaron Donald over him? Yes. But it just goes to show you, it doesn't necessarily mean that the best player is getting paid the most. It means the best player at that time, if he's up, he's going to get paid the most.
Let's go to the phones. Former NFL agent. He does an amazing job breaking down contracts and analyzing the salary cap for CBS Sports. Check out the new podcast, Inside the Cap. Joel Corey joining us here on 95.7 The Game. Joel, it's always a pleasure. Thank you for your time. Let's start with Dak Prescott. The word on the street is that he's got a deal on the table, an offer on the table, I should say, $33 to $35 million per year over 5 years with $100 million guaranteed. If you were his agent, do you recommend him taking that deal?
No, particularly if it's a five-year deal. I wouldn't do anything more than 4 years. Prior to Patrick Mahomes signing a deal, the trend had been players at the position signing for 4 new years. Ryan Tannehill, 4 years. Goff, Jared Goff, Carson Wentz, Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson gave up 4 new years. The only high-priced quarterback, more than 4 new years, Matt Ryan, 5-year extension. Too long.
So when you look at his situation, though, potentially on the open market, if you hypothetically were his agent, would you be scared at all about what happened to Cam Newton? I know Dak is younger and his trajectory is going higher, but the fact that Cam had to settle for the veteran minimum, would that scare you at all about going out on the open market?
No, because I'm not coming off of a shoulder injury, which kept me out of half of a year, and then a foot injury, which kept me out almost the full season. So he had multiple injuries. Plus, this was a unique year in a lot of respects. I mean, I'm looking at it from a supply and demand aspect, that you had more quarterbacks hit the market than we've ever seen. Typically, you have more demand than supply. And also, Cam was under contract. So he potentially, if he'd been free or released earlier, could have been in a better situation than having to sign the contract in New England. Maybe if he's free, he's in Chicago, and they don't trade for Nick Foles if they could just sign him outright. So I think the two situations are apples and oranges.
With that being said, what is the biggest concern for you for Dak Prescott, looking at the deal that's on the table? So you're saying 5 years is too long, but a guy of that stature has one of the quarterbacks that has never made the money. This is not a first-round quarterback that's going on his second contract. Do you take that in consideration? If so, if not, why?
Yeah, you do take it in consideration, but the hard part was last year. Turning down a deal last summer negotiations was harder. He'd made $2 million in 3 years off of his NFL contract, then was going to make $2 million to play his final year of his rookie contract. The equation has now changed. He is guaranteed to make $31.4 million. It's a lot easier to turn down a deal knowing you have $31.4 coming as opposed to it was a year ago. So now the dynamics have started to shift in Dak Prescott's favor.
Joel Corey, former NFL agent, joining Joe Lowe and Dibs here on 95.7 The Game. The Chiefs have handed out over $200 million in guaranteed money over the last week to quarterback Patrick Mahomes and defensive tackle Chris Jones. You throw in the Frank Clark deal. You throw in the Tyreek Hill deal. You throw in the fact that Kelsey's coming up at some point. How long's their window? Or how wide, should I say, is this window going to be before the salary cap catches up with them?
Well, the salary cap is the unknown variable. In a typical year, you know it's going to go up a certain – you can project it'll go up X percent or a range. We know revenues are going to drop. So the NFL and NFLPA are going to have to negotiate what happens with the 2021 cap. I can't see a big drop next year. I expect a negotiation where you spread out losses for a flat cap. But Kansas City's in win-now mode. But as long as you have Patrick Mahomes and he's under contract seemingly forever – that they're going to have a reasonable chance to be competitive as long as he continues to be Patrick Mahomes. But they are definitely in a win-now mode and are trying to run it back in the next year or two.
I couldn't agree with you more. Let's go back a little bit about Dallas. There's an interesting scenario now that I look at, too, and how much do you consider this? The redhead pistol. Andy Dalton's there in a situation if this team struggles, if they don't get in the playoffs, or even if they're teetering. You think there'll be a cry in Dallas for Andy Dalton? Here's a guy that's been in the playoffs. Here's a guy that's a serviceable quarterback. Some might say that he is a starter in this league. Some might say he's comparable to Dak Prescott. What say you?
Everybody loves the backup quarterback until he has to get on the field. So if Dallas struggles, the fans will be clamoring for him. But if you kind of look at what Dallas has done historically, they had Kyle Orton making like $5 and $6 million to be Tony Romo's backup at some junctures of his career. So they, at times, had a quarterback who could be considered a starting caliber quarterback. So that's not new. It's not a new variable to have a guy as your backup. He can step in, and hopefully there won't be a big drop-off in play if he has to be on the field for an extended period of time.
Joel, the 49ers have had some interesting machinations in this offseason, particularly with Raheem Mostert, who was looking for a pay increase and didn't get it and now has asked for a trade. Is there a sense that Kyle Shanahan can make anything out of any running back he needs with the scheme he has, and thus Mostert becomes less important to that team?
Yeah, if you look at it historically, and I'm not going back just to Kyle Shanahan because his scheme is a derivative of his dad's scheme, that they've had years where they've had any running back come in and perform at a pretty high level. I remember, I'm dating myself, Terrell Davis got hurt, and Landis Gary came in and played well. Then you had like Mike Anderson, who was like, who's that guy? And they played well. So, yeah, running backs have been devalued for the most part in the NFL. So Mostert doesn't have a lot of leverage in this situation. Plus, Matt Breida is now in Miami. So his trade request is going to go in one ear and out the other with the 49ers.
Former NFL agent, CBS Sports, Joel Corey with us here on 95.7 The Game. What's the best case scenario for George Kittle as well as the San Francisco 49ers? If everyone can walk away happy, what does that look like? And what's the likelihood we get something like that? Could you see this situation getting contentious? Could you see us getting into the 2020 season without a deal being done?
That's possible. It all depends on what offer they put on the table, because typically you got a guy who's a mid to late round pick, and you stick a lot of money in his face, he's going to be tempted to take the offer. Now, if you're talking $12 million per year, that's not going to get it done. If you look at historically what's the highest paid tight end, if you adjust for cap inflation, we're talking basically $15 million is the ceiling. So maybe if you stuck $14, $15 million, front-loaded the contract, you get Kittle to think twice. I don't think he gets wide receiver money, but if you put him up there, I think that'd be hard to turn down.
Yeah, so do I. I do believe that it's going to be anywhere from $13 to $16 million. I'm too in the same camp that you're in. But if you just look at the state of the National Football League, especially now when you think about Mahomes just getting paid, you're looking at Jones just getting paid. Look around the league. You've seen you know, running backs and different guys are getting paid. McCaffrey, Edge, George Kittle, I understand he's a late round guy, wasn't a high draft pick. Do you think you can see his agent allowing this young man to get on the field? Last year he came off a knee injury, you know, was out for several weeks. So you can see it's a possibility that he plays this year and just played for the tag, huh?
Yeah, because here's the one thing. This would be the interesting dynamic, that if you don't report to training camp on time, you don't get an accrued season. You lose the right to get it. So he would have three accrued seasons if he played all 16 games. If you have three accrued seasons, you're a year shy of having service time to be unrestricted. So they could put a restricted free agent tender on him next year. It would be the first round tender. They'd still have the right to franchise him, which I think they might do anyway. So it'll be interesting to see if Kittle reports on time, because once you miss the mandatory reporting date, you're in it to win it, in my opinion.
Joel, real quick here at the buzzer, A.J. Green is one of three players who hasn't signed his franchise tag. It doesn't look like he's going to get a long-term deal with the Bengals, or maybe something comes out of the blue today. What do you think the future holds? Could he be available via trade if the price is right, or is Cincinnati going to hold firm now that they've drafted Joe Burrow?
I think they hold firm now that they drafted Joe Burrow, but I wouldn't give him a long-term deal. He didn't play last year. He played half the year before. In 2016, he was hurt. He's going to be 32 at the end of the month. This screams playing the franchise tag.
Former NFL agent, he does an amazing job breaking down contracts and analyzing the salary cap over at CBS Sports. And check out the new podcast, Inside the Cap, with Joel Corey. Joel Corey here on 95.7 The Game. Thanks, Joel. Always a dynamite job.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Myles Garrett, 5 years, $125 million. Fun fact about this. This would be the first Cleveland Browns first-round pick since Joe Hayden was selected in 2010 to reach a second contract. All those guys, Justin Gilbert, Johnny Manziel, Brandon Whedon, everybody in the mix right there, Barcavius Mingo and others, this would be the first Cleveland first-round pick to reach a second contract since cornerback Joe Hayden out of Florida back in 2010, Dibs.
And that's not good, Joe. Usually you want to draft him and keep him, I would imagine. And I keep thinking about Johnny Manziel and the fact that Myles Garrett, a first-rounder, is getting a nine-figure deal, and Johnny Manziel is working on his seven iron in Las Vegas. The NFL football could be a fickle game.
Yeah, that it could. And it just goes to show you that, you know, that what Cleveland has done over the years, and it just continues to echo, the organization, for whatever reason, hasn't had the right people leading their team, hasn't had the right coaches. Or when they do have the right people, they're not willing to give it time to work, because you look at the players, some of the players that went on, and, you know, look at the Honey Badger, certain guys that went on to have a good career. So how much is it coaching? How much is it front office? But hopefully they got this one right, because Mal Garrett seems to be a pretty good little player.
Coming up at 8:30 today, we're revealing number 6 in the top 10 Bay Area athletes of all time, voted on by you, the fans. That's today at 8:30. Damon Ratto and Kolsky revealed number 7 yesterday afternoon, former Golden State Warrior Rick Barry. Now, you've heard the news. Prescott is angling for a new deal but might not get it. Myles Garrett's on the verge of signing a record breaker. Chris Jones got paid yesterday. What does it all mean for the San Francisco 49ers? Because there could be some massive, massive implications over the next 2 to 3 years. We've got that on the other side. It's Joe Lowe and Dibs here on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to Joe, Lowe, and Dibs.
I promise you, Dibbers, tell him!
On 95.7, The Game.
Wu-Tang Wednesday says this segment right here is presented by our friends at Golden State Lumber. They're open from 6 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. Some of the locations as well open on Saturday. Visit goldenstatelumber.com for more information. Johnny Cueto has been named your opening day starter 8 days from today in Los Angeles to take on the Dodgers. This will be his fifth opening day start and his first for the Giants. We've got more on that later in the show. And we've also got to reveal number 6 on the top 10 countdown for the greatest Bay Area athletes of all time. That will be at 8:30. But right now, twofold. Number one, Myles Garrett, pass rusher, Cleveland Browns. He's on the verge of signing a record-breaking deal, 5 years, $125 million. At $25 million per year, he would become the highest-paid defensive player of all time. Khalil Mack currently first at $23.5 million per year. I want you to think about those numbers, and then I want you to go back to last winter when he took Mason Rudolph's helmet on Thursday Night Football and swung it at him at the end of that Pittsburgh Steelers game. Do you remember all the outrage, the post-game show, sports talk radio, the TV telling you how awful it was, how he could have killed him, A, B, C, D? We were yelling and screaming. People couldn't get over it. It doesn't matter. It mattered in the moment for 15 minutes, and then we all moved on. It shows you prioritize. Prioritize what you get angry about. Prioritize what you get happy about. Prioritize what you spend your precious time thinking about. Because the Garrett thing was outrage because we had nothing else to get outraged about. And now, here we are in July, and he's about to become the highest paid player in defensive history. It's not even close, Dibs. And no one even cares about the Mason Rudolph thing anymore. Probably not even Mason Rudolph.
No, and you were the one who said that maybe not the next day, or it was probably the day after. And I was outraged at your lack of outrage because I thought that this would be a massive deal. I thought that this could be something where the punishment would be far more severe and that, you know, the player may actually face criminal charges. And you said this is going to blow over in 24 hours. And it blew over in about 25 hours. So luckily, I don't have to say you were right, Joe, because I think you missed the window by just a little bit. But the fact that he now, what would this be, about 8 months later, is cashing in at an extraordinary record-breaking level. I guess at this juncture, Lo, I must tell Joe, yes, you were right. The outrage was short-lived, and now we're on to Cincinnati, and he's on to the bank.
Yeah, I think that it's, you know, you look at certain situations, you're absolutely going to be outraged. When it happens, I think a lot of people were outraged and disappointed in the whole ordeal. And aren't we all always outraged over something, but we know how to get over it? We outrage it, whether it's a loved one or something happens, you know, you're going to be outraged. And I think that when you looked at the moment, at the situation, if, you know, I know we say if and ands and buts, what's candies and nuts, what'll have a Merry Christmas. But if he hits him in different places, in a different part with that helmet, if someone's not there and he hits him, you know, in a temple and it's a different outcome, would it be different? Would we be still here saying, having a different conversation? I think so. I think if you know, if this guy was not able to play and, you know, and lost an eye or eye popped out or something of that magnitude, then we're looking at it differently. There's lawsuits. There's other things. In the heat of the moment, hey, didn't happen, but it could have happened. And I think that's why I think that you had to have some sense of reserve and some sense of saying, hey, look, this could have been an offer deal that you hopefully, you know, Myles Garrett, because we know he's a good guy, can be a good person. People, everyone around, they did interviews and talk about what kind of individual he is. But at the same sense, you do need to make sure that you have something in place, that he's doing anger management and doing those things, because you could have done something, could have been a lot worse than what occurred.
Joe Theismann coming up in 7 minutes here. Joe Lo and Dibs, 95.7 The Game. 3 years ago, you couldn't find a defender anywhere in the NFL who was making an average of $20 million per year. Now it's the norm for the cream of the crop. Khalil Mack, 23.5. Aaron Donald, 22.5. DeMarcus Lawrence and DeForest Buckner both making $21 million a year. Frank Clark from the Kansas City Chiefs at $20.8 million a year. Garrett set to join them sometime later today, possibly tomorrow. 5 years, $125 million. An absolute record breaker. So this is the trend. Pay the quarterback because he's the most important, and then pay the guys who can disrupt the quarterback because they're the second most important. The question becomes whether or not you can pay both. Kansas City is going to attempt to pull that off over the next few years. They already won a Super Bowl, but they hadn't paid the quarterback yet. In fact, they're not even really paying him that much this upcoming season. But once they start paying Mahomes, and they're paying Frank Clark and Chris Jones, how successful can they be? I ask this question because I take a look at the San Francisco 49ers. When you're bad, it's no coincidence that you generally have a ton of money to spend. It's because you don't really have any good players. And the Niners, for about 4 or 5 years, constantly had a lot of salary cap space. That's why they would win the offseason. You would talk about all the salary cap space and the high draft picks and how set they were to build. Well, build they have, and now that they're good, they don't have that salary cap space anymore. They went from having plenty, top three in the NFL, to about league average. They're 16th right now in terms of available space. Not bad, but it's going to continue to dwindle over the next few years. Everybody knows about the George Kittle situation and how the best tight end in the game is going to need to get paid at some point. But Fred Warner only has 2 years left on his deal. Deebo Samuel, 3 years left on his deal because he wasn't a first-round pick. Mike McGlinchey, your offensive tackle of the future, 3 years left on his deal. That also leads into what are you going to do with Trent Williams, because if you don't pay him after this year, maybe McGlinchey slides over, and then you need a right tackle. Nick Bosa, 4 years left. Obviously, he's only played one. That includes the fifth-year option. And Jimmy Garoppolo, believe it or not, only 3 years left on his deal. You are going to have a situation in 3 years where you're going to have to start making decisions on Garoppolo, McGlinchey, Deebo, and Nick Bosa all right around the same time. So I ask you, you've got a ton of talent, which is a good thing. A, do you plan on keeping all of it, Dibs? And B, what's your window looking like now for winning a Super Bowl based on this? Because it's going to be very difficult to hand out a franchise deal to Garoppolo if he plays well, and a franchise deal to Bosa. $25 million is just going to become the standard for defensive ends in 4 years.
Yeah, and I was looking at the Garrett-Bosa comparisons, and I know Garrett's been playing for 3 years, Bosa for one, but the rookie year that Nick Bosa had better than Miles Garrett's first year. So if he continues on a similar trajectory, he's going to make that same kind of Garrett money, and he actually might even reset the market. His brother might do it as well. But Jimmy Garoppolo is the interesting one for me. What you've seen, and you broke this down yesterday, Joe, as far as the skill position players, if you put them on the Bill Barnwell piece, if you put them with an average quarterback and an average team, average offensive line, etc., the Niners personnel from a tight end, wide receiver, running back standpoint, middle of the road. So I think that Deebo Samuel's the one you probably won't re-sign. And Fred Warner, too, because you've got Dre Greenlaw, who you figure could slide into that spot. So for me, it's Bosa and Garoppolo are the two big ones you're going to have to be faced with. And fortunately, if you continue to have both of them play well, you'd like to think you could get back to a Super Bowl before those guys come up.
Yeah, I don't know if you look at Fred Warner and think about what he means to the defense, getting guys lined up, making the calls, and adjusting guys. I think that you certain positions that you can play, you can pay, and it really doesn't affect you because you're not necessarily going over the moon and beyond. And I think a linebacker, I think an offensive guard, a center, I think some of those positions, Daniel, it was those positions that you can look at and say, most teams can afford them. They're not going to necessarily break you like a pass rusher, a cornerback, a quarterback, receiver. There's other positions, and of course, an offensive tackle, but there's other interior linemen, running back, certain things that you can get by with linebackers that aren't going to just set you so far apart that you can't be able to sign those type of guys. So I do agree with you about some of those skill positions, those cornerbacks and those positions. It's hard to keep pass rushers, corners, quarterbacks, and big-time receivers and offensive tackles. So other positions, though, I think you have a better chance of keeping.
I think it just depends on what you're looking at as far as the 49ers and wide receivers go. I mean, Dante Pettis was a guy they drafted, and he's not really working out. If Brandon Ayuk can come in and be somebody, if you get Jalen Hurd to get on the field and he can perform, I think that takes a little bit of the shine off Deebo Samuel if you have other options. If you don't have Ayuk play well, if Pettis ends up being released, if Jalen Hurd can't make it back and Deebo is your only reliable wide receiver, I think then his value to this team goes extraordinarily higher. So it's almost outside factors as far as Deebo Samuel goes to me, whether or not he'll get a monster deal with this team.
No, you're right. You're right when it comes to that, because you haven't had other guys hit. So you got to do a better job of doing the draft. You got to do a better job of free agents, because there's always second tier guys that are on the market that you can get. That's still a pretty good, that can be pretty good players for you. You see that all the time with certain teams that they go out and they don't necessarily have superstars, but they have guys that can plug and play. Guys are just professionals. Remember when I was in San Diego, we went and got Keenan McCardell. Keenan McCardell wasn't necessarily the best receiver at the time when we got him, but he was still a serviceable receiver, a guy just knew the nuances of the game, knew how to come in and be a veteran, knew how to come in and teach some of the young guys how to go out and run routes and do those things, the things that you can rely on. You knew on third and five he's going to go to third and six or seven. You knew that he was going to do those small things. You knew that he was going to be reliable. But was he a game breaker or a game changer? No, by no stretch of imagination. And I think that's what the Niners are going to try to do, and that's what they're going to have to do if they're going to compete. If they're going to compete for this window handle. You're going to have to start hitting on guys, those guys that are still good, those guys that are constant pros, those guys, not the upper echelon, but just solid, good NFL pro-type players ready to step in and play at a high level.
Fred Warner, 2 years from now, will probably cost at least $12 million per year, because if Corey Littleton just got 11.75 from the Raiders, you add two more years for Fred Warner on. That's going to be $12 million per year. And Fred Warner is the quarterback of the defense. If Dre Greenlaw is capable of sliding into the middle, that's great. But outside linebacker in a 4-3 versus inside linebacker in any scheme is going to be very, very different. Fred's got the green dot, and he's been outstanding for this team. So if you let him go, you got to find a way to replace an integral position on the defensive side of the ball. The moral of the story here is this. For everyone out there who keeps banging the table about going and trading for Jamal Adams, think about what that's going to cost you from a draft pick perspective. Then think about what it's going to cost you financially. Then think about the fact that Warner's got 2 years left. And then in 3 years, Debo's up, McGlinchey's up, Garoppolo's up, and then Bosa's up in 4 years. And that's before you even talk about George Kittle. It's before you even talk about Trent Williams and if he leaves, who you're going to come in at, who's going to come in at right tackle. It's before you start talking about offensive guards and centers, because who knows how long Reston Richburg's going to be around. Offensive guards eventually going to need to be addressed. Corners going to need to be addressed because none of the corners on the roster are under contract for next season. So your window is getting shorter and shorter by the day. As we transition to the update, you are listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, a radio.com sports station. Good morning and welcome to your 7 o'clock hour of Joe Lowe and Dibs here on 95.7 The Game. 90 minutes from now at 8:30, we reveal number 6 on the fan vote for the top 10 greatest Bay Area athletes of all time. Rick Barry, former Warrior, was number 7. That was revealed on Damon Ratto and Kolsky yesterday afternoon. We've got number 6 for you in 90 minutes. But right now we're going to the phones. Super Bowl champ, 1983 MVP, former Washington quarterback. Check out the new book, How to Be a Champion Every Day, 6 Timeless Keys to Success. The great Joe Theismann joining us here on 95.7 The Game. Joe, there's plenty to get into with you, but we always appreciate the time. Tell us the book about it. It's been released. What's the feedback on it so far? How's it been going on the book circuit?
It's been going very well. You know, with these crazy times, you really can't get out and do anything publicly. So it's a little bit of a challenge there, but people can get it on Amazon. And it really is based off the presentations that I've done for a number of years. It's really not a sports book. It's a business book. And it deals with the world of sports, the world of business, and our own lives and how they parallel one another. And one of the features of it is the last thing I wrote in it called A Letter to My Younger Self. It was something that Derek Jeter started.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.